This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Game Misconduct. I am Don LaGreca. Monday means the great EJ Raddick from the NHL Network. He's actually in the city. He'll actually be at the Ranger Wild game tonight. Can't wait to finally get a chance to see you. How are you, buddy?
Oh, it'd be nice to see you too. Nice to see. Although I do see you a lot, and you probably see me a lot.
Yes.
Like you don't hear me.
No.
And I occasionally hear you because prior to our show going on, and after I come back to my office, I usually check in with you and Michael and Peter and your crew there. And the other day you had something on that just cracked me up laughing. I forget. You made like a malaprompt of some sort. You were trying to say somebody should be a better broadcaster, and then you said something about a ditch digger.
Yes.
And you got a yes. And I was
the world needs ditch diggers too, but that's not exactly how it came out.
No. But it was very funny.
Right.
And, but anyway, so it'll be good to see you in the flesh, in person.
Yes, looking forward to that. Looking forward to talking some hockey with you. I guess let's start with the big story. Robert Portuzzo suspended 4 games for his vicious, I believe, cross-check on Arvidsson. It's going to keep Arvidsson out for the next 4 to 6 weeks. And I guess this one really irritated a lot of people, myself included, because he cross-checks him, knocks him down. There's a penalty. He reacts to the penalty. So he knows he's going 2 minutes for cross-checking. And while Arvidsson is down, just viciously cross-checks him again and knocks him out for the next month. To me, that's almost beyond the hockey play because he kind of knew in the moment that he was already going to get the penalty. It was gratuitous. It was vicious. And I think it's well-deserved, if not more games, in my opinion.
Well, I tend to agree with you. I mean, I do. I always check in with player safety on these things because I know they take, these guys look at everything and, they have, their reasons for what they do. And, I always want to hear from them on these things. And the feeling was that that for most other guys, this act would have been really just a fine. But with the history and the injury elevates it to a 4-game suspension, which is a pretty big jump. Now, that's their side of it. And, like, again, they watch this constantly, and this is what they do. And I think they get it right 99.9% of the time.
Well, I guess my problem.
I don't agree with this one because I think optically, Don, I mean, the optics of this are really bad. And the guy's out 4 to 6 weeks, and I don't know. I just think it was really vicious and beyond the pale, so to speak. There's been video of him doing something similar to Brock Nelson that's circulated on the internet.
Yes.
And Robert Bertuzzo is one of these kinds of guys. I mean, he's a tough guy in a league that's changing over the last couple of decades. And, listen, he was part of a Stanley Cup winner. He made a great play. I believe it was in the game against San Jose or Dallas in one of the earlier rounds last year. And so I think it was against San Jose, but the bottom line is that, he is somebody that plays on a nasty edge, and he's a big, strong, physical guy. I think he got in a fight with Zach Sanford in his own one of their practices last year. So he plays a nasty game, and this, to me, was kind of beyond the pale. And I think it should have been one of those where he has to come in and should have been at least 5 games, and I would have been happy to see him get 8 to 10, to be quite honest with you, because I thought it was nasty. Now, I can be sarcastic and say maybe the best punishment is to force the Blues to have to play him the entire game for several games because he's not that great a player. He is what he is. He's a physical, strong, stay-at-home, fixed defenseman. So maybe that would be the better punishment is to force the Blues to have to use him throughout the night.
Yeah, exactly.
The reality is that, for me at least, it was, I kind of agree with you. I understand where player safety is coming from. But I think this is something in the future they need to discuss because this is kind of one of those Lone Ranger-style acts, and I hate seeing it. It's like, I think someone embellished, so I am going to now hit them even harder. And, listen, it's not for Robert Bertuzzo to determine who embellishes and who doesn't. I don't think that was an embellishment. Robert Bertuzzo's strong. He cross-checked him hard in the back. The guy went flying. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I think it could have been way more.
Yeah, and then he got the 4, as you said, because he had been a repeat offender. I believe he's been suspended twice before. So third time's the charm as far as getting those extra, what turned out to be four games, because you're telling me that it could have just been a fine. But here's where I look at it between, you know, a hockey play and something that's vicious. If that had been the original cross-check, it's all right, that's a hockey play. It got a little bit away from him. But to have him down, see him react to knowing I'm getting a penalty, it just felt to me like, all right, well, I'm just going to give him another shot. What else is going to happen to me here? And that to me takes it out of the realm of it being a hockey play. Now it's just almost an attack, like an assault. Like, I'm getting a free shot at you because I've already committed the penalty. I'm mad at you because I think you dove and drew the penalty. See, that to me can't be tolerated. And then on top of that, and I'm assuming now, maybe I'm wrong to assume, that the second cross check caused the injury. Yeah, and
well,
and
you don't really know.
You don't really know, but it definitely, you know, it's on the table, and we're talking about a star player who's going to be out possibly for the next month and a half. It's not right.
Yeah, it's not. And you know, the other thing too is the other thing. You know, and this is like, I mean, the stick is a weapon, right? It's not like an NFL game where a guy gives a guy a nasty shot. I mean, the stick is a weapon. I mean, let's say in the NFL, let's say somebody rips somebody's helmet off. You know, and this will probably never happen. But, you know, take that helmet and hit the guy across the head with it. I mean, that would be a significant suspension in the NFL. And it turns out, lo and behold, it was. And I think this is something similar. This is an attack with a weapon. You know, we've seen cross checks. I get it. I know that, you know, there are levels. But I just thought this one rose to a level. I agree with you. I just thought it rose to a level of viciousness that you could have sent a little bit of a more significant message. I mean, four games is significant, but, you know, I think you could have sent a really much harsher message because and especially when I look at those videos of Bertuzzo doing the same thing to Brock Nelson. I mean, you know, down on the ice, cross-checking them, and, you know, that's just the stuff we don't need, and people get hurt, as was the case with Arvidsson.
And then you get a spitting incident that costs a guy three games. It just didn't seem to make a lot of sense.
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, spitting is in a different category, I guess, and it's pretty disgusting, and it should be. I think in the rule book, you know, I think Brian Lawton on NHL Now brought it up last week about, you know, this should be in the rule book as an actual, like if you spit at another player, it's a 5-game suspension or an 8-game suspension.
Right.
Just a hard black and white rule. Because if you do that to an official, I believe it is in the rule book that you got a 5 or 10-game suspension. I'm not sure the exact number. It might be 10. But it's in the rule book. And I think this would be a way to deter the players from doing something like that because it is a very disgusting thing to do to another person in any circumstance.
Yeah, and licking gets you a phone call. So there is a lot of impropriety around the National Hockey League for sure. Just drives a lot of people crazy. I want to talk to you about Connor McDavid. I mean, the kid is just so absolutely special. And we grew up in a time where these numbers were pretty ordinary, but now we live in a time where these are just astronomical numbers. I mean, we're talking about a player, EJ, that's on pace for like 160 points.
Both he and Leon Draisaitl has one more point.
It's incredible.
Right.
You know, and you look at John Carlson. When I was doing the Capital game the other day, and I was mentioning to Dave, I mean, he's on pace to blow up 100 points. We haven't seen a defenseman with 100 points since Brian Leetch in the early 90s. I mean, I know sometimes it'll calm down as we get deeper and deeper into the season, but, you know, we're at the quarter pole here. So the math is telling you we're going to see some unbelievable numbers here.
Yeah, I agree. And hopefully both Draisaitl, McDavid, and Carlson all stay healthy. And, you know, it's, you know, watching Connor and Leon, they were in an overtime game against the Coyotes on Sunday evening. And Dave Tippett was really shrewd. He, there was a break. He called a timeout. He rested the guys. He put them back out there. He used them almost for the entire overtime. They ended up going to a shootout. But, it's really funny to watch these guys. They're quite amazing to watch these guys. They're just so, so good. You know, you watch them, I look at Draisaitl and I'm like, wow, he's so good. And you see McDavid do something crazy and you're like, oh my God, how good is he? So it's really kind of, it's hard to fathom they're on the same team playing with each other. So I think their point totals get a little inflated because they have the other guy there with them. But what a dynamic duo, as great a dynamic duo as we've probably seen in this game. And, it's amazing. And you're right, the point numbers are up. I was at the Rangers Minnesota Wild morning skate, and I got to talk to Henrik Lundqvist for a few minutes, and he was talking about how the game now is just, we've seen it. The Rangers had a great rally in Montreal from four down to win that game. I think it was only the fourth time in franchise history, and they've been around a while to have that happen. And he just talked about how these young guys now, they just have so much skill, and they just go.
Yeah.
And it's fun to watch, that's for sure.
Yeah, you're right. I got the call that comeback against Montreal. First time the Rangers came back from four-plus goals down since way back in 1991. And then you look at Florida. They twice have come back from four-goal deficits. That's the first time that's happened since the 83 Oilers. So wow. I think the game's in a good place as far as, hey, you don't want to shut it off. We were doing NHL Live at a time where if a one goal lead going to the third period, you had a 900 winning percentage. I mean, it was over.
Yeah.
It was done.
Yeah.
And now I think you can't turn these games off. You know, 3-4 goal leads, really, no matter what, you've got a chance for it to come back.
Yeah, and teams are definitely, they're leaning on that within their locker rooms and on their benches. They know that, hey, listen, we're not done yet. Now, most of the time, the team that's leading is going to win the game, but certainly, it's not a given like it had been, in a previous era.
Yeah, and I think that goes up because of the fact that a team may still win, but they might win in overtime or the shootout. So you still can get points in the standings even if you're down significantly. Of course, the other big story too, EJ, I wanted to get your thoughts on it. Obviously, the firing of Mike Babcock. You're hearing a story come out from a couple of years ago in which he asked a young player to list the deficiencies of his teammates and then revealed, the guys that were on the bottom end. And, I don't know what's true and what's not, but, if you talk to Mike Commodore, he has one opinion about Mike Babcock. But just your overall just thoughts of the firing and the fact that since then the Leafs have actually won a couple of games in a row.
Well, I mean, Mike had a lot of success coaching for a long time. So, I mean, whatever he was doing, it seemed to work for him. Now, I know talking to people going all the way back to his time with the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim, going that far back, Mike is the guy that he would apparently play these, the mind games with players. And in his way, in his effort to try to get more out of his players and out of his team, that's the only thing I could think of. I mean, I don't think he would do it just for kicks. I think at the end of the day, you're coaching, you're trying to get your team to play to the highest level they can possibly play at. So I'm sure Mike had a reasoning for doing the things that he did. I'm sure, this was one story that was been told quite a bit about. Apparently it was allegedly Mitch Marner and who was asked that. And, I'm sure there'll be other stories that may come out because in the aftermath of it, when anybody is fired or they get traded, it seems like everybody wants to talk at that point. But, Leafs have moved on to Sheldon Keefe now. He was sitting there waiting in the wings for quite a while. He is the general manager's guy. There's no question about that. Kyle Dubas has a history with Sheldon Keefe. So far, so good through two games. Everything is bright and shiny and new. And, people who were maybe feeling that they weren't getting a fair look from Mike Babcock are feeling like a breath of fresh air, but we'll see how things go over the next couple of weeks. I mean, this team still has some challenges. They still have some injury issues. They got to get some guys back. That's been the problem throughout the season. They haven't had to play a back to back under Keith yet. So, how will he handle the goaltending situation when that occurs? So, there's still some challenges, but for one, Tyson Barrie looks like he's been rejuvenated and seems to be more willing to jump into the play now and moved up to a different level of responsibility within that group. So, we'll see how it plays out. But certainly in the short term, it's one of those things where in the short term, there's always that excitement. I talked to both coaches today, David Quinn and Bruce Boudreau with the Rangers and the Wild. And, they both have similar, they're in the middle of it with their seasons. And, it's hard. You go through ups and downs, and we'll see where Sheldon Keefe is, 3, 4, 5 weeks from now when the team maybe isn't, when all that newness is worn off.
Mm-hmm. With a league so young, EJ, is Babcock's style now becoming a bit of a dinosaur where it's difficult for younger players to relate to that way of coaching?
I don't know. I mean, Barry Trotz is doing pretty well with the Islanders, and, he's probably in that same window as Mike. you know, I think all the situations are different. I think players have a level of acceptance when somebody comes into a situation that's not going well or there's underachieving and they want to kind of have success. So, you know, I think we'll see. I mean, if Mike does get another opportunity down the road, you would think normally that he would, but it just, his contract is such a large contract that you do wonder. It limits, I would say, the teams that would be able to jump in on a Mike Babcock sweepstakes to be a coach. So I think he'll coach again. I don't know exactly when. I don't know exactly where. And then we'll find out. We'll have a better idea. But if he goes into a situation where times are struggling, those players will be eager to listen probably and eager to try to get better. And they'll hope that Mike has the answers for them.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting moving forward for sure. I just I hate to see, because you see it in all sports. You see it in baseball now with the analytics where it seems like you want to do things that are going to pave the way for the players, right? The contracts are all obnoxiously long. Players are making so much money that I don't want to say the inmates are running the asylum, but it's, listen, you're going to make sure you get a coach that's right for the players that you have.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of de facto, those players kind of dictate how they want to be coached. But you do see veterans, like say Barry Trotz is doing an excellent job with the Islanders. I think Joel Quenneville's doing a solid job with Florida. So I'm not saying that veteran coaches can't do it. But when I heard those stories about Babcock, I thought of Mike Keenan. And I thought to myself, Mike Keenan would never fly today. It just wouldn't. I mean, I don't think the players would tolerate that, right? I mean, you know all the Mike Keenan stories and some of their folklore. Some of them are very accurate.
It would be a challenge for sure, and you know, it's a different world now, and Mike coached a completely different way than the guys coach today, and the way the guys have to coach today with all the information that's at their disposal. Mike was an extremely successful coach in his era, but, you know, I think guys are always, you know, Mike Babcock, from, you know, I know him a little bit, and others, you know, he can be a little bit stubborn, like most people have success. They feel that they know the way to do things, and, you know, perhaps that got the better of him in Toronto. Hard to say. It is difficult, Donnie. I mean, imagine yourself at, you know, ESPN Radio, and a new general manager came in, and they had a guy that he just loved and just kept saying how much he'd be great working with Michael Kay, and he was on, like, at a different in the night, but, you know, he was sitting there, you know, waiting for that opportunity. I mean, that's what's happened with Kyle Dubas and Sheldon Keefe. I mean, so for Mike, you know, to be there, I mean, he was very well compensated. He will continue to be well compensated. He's got quite a track record. But it is an unusual circumstance to have someone like that being the head coach and somebody really waiting in the wings to perhaps take that job. So Mike, you know, he's a big personality. He took a lot of the bullets when things were going bad. We'll see how things go with Sheldon Keefe now.
All right, you want to do some tweets here, buddy?
Let's do some tweets.
All right, let's go to Jake. Bruins, Capitals, or Islanders? Pick one that you feel has the best shot to make the finals at this point.
Capitals. Yeah. I think that when they're healthy, they're just bigger, stronger, better. They own the Bruins. I mean, they've owned them for a while now. So, but not to say the Bruins couldn't beat them in a seven-game series, but the numbers are the numbers. The Capitals have had a lot of success against the Bruins. I love the way the Islanders are playing, but when I look at it, I just think that the Capitals, they've got a little bit of that, you know, we've just done it recently kind of feel about their team as well. And, you know, that's a good group there. But those are three teams that are, those are the best three teams in the East without question. Maybe three of the best teams in the league.
And the Islanders keep doing it. They lost on Saturday, but they did earn a point against San Jose. And, you know, they just keep, what is it, 17 straight games now, which they've gotten a point in standings.
Yeah, I think it's 15-0-2.
Yeah, 15. Just incredible run. And really, just so many different contributors. Brock Nelson's been hot, and doesn't matter who's in goal. So that's a really nice run that they're on. And, you know, the Bruins, those are three of the best teams right now in the Eastern Conference, and we'll see how it shakes out.
I would say it does matter a little bit who's in goal. They've been winning with both. But to be fair to Thomas Greiss, his numbers are significantly, at least his save percentage is significantly better.
Yeah.
I think a .934 for his save percentage is significantly better than a .913. Not to say that a .913 isn't good, but .934 is outstanding. I don't know if Greiss can keep that up, but maybe it's coincidence, maybe it isn't. But I believe Varlamov was in goal for both of those overtime losses.
Yeah, that's true.
The Penguins and one against the Sharks. So they're both playing extremely well. But to be fair to Thomas Greiss,
no, it's a good point.
The better of the two guys.
I was just looking at the angle that you have a streak like that, and they've literally alternated each game. So
they've done it all year. And I think it's probably the best for both guys. You know, it'll be interesting. Last year, right, Don, we went to the playoffs, and even though the numbers were very similar, it was Robin Leonard's team. This year, if they go into the playoffs, and let's say everything stays relatively the same, is it Thomas Greif's team in the playoffs? I mean, certainly by the number, that's what it would tell you. But that'll be a decision Barry Trotz will have to make, and he'll be happy to make it when the time comes.
Yeah, there's no question. All right, our basically weekly question about where Taylor Hall's going to go. Troy says, are you you guys hearing the rumor of Hall to Calgary?
Well, that's an interesting one because, you know, the Calgary Flames have some challenges right now. And, you know, the general manager there, Brad Treliving, he put himself on the hot seat. He said, hey, the general manager has been blank. And he goes, we all need to be better, and it starts here. So, like, I give him full marks for taking, taking the blame and shouldering that. Now, I would say that there's a degree of that that is accurate because I don't think some of the moves he's made have been all that great. I don't think adding Milan Lucic was a terrific move. I don't know about, the goaltending situation is adding Cam Talbot. Now, Talbot hasn't played a ton so far, but he obviously hasn't gotten the confidence of the coach to play him more than these seven games he's been in, and the numbers haven't been great. Save percentages under nine, but that's probably part and parcel with the group in front of me. Went out and got Tobias Reeder, also from the Edmonton Oilers. So it's three different Oilers. You know, I don't know, you know, picking up guys from a team that finished below you in the standings is not really a great thing. But at any rate, it just hasn't happened for them so far this year. And Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan have been some significant slumps. I mean, significant slumps. T.J. Brody had the health issue and was out of the lineup for a while. So, and Mark Giordano, who I love and has had a great career. I mean, like, how is he going to have as good a year last year as he did? You know, how is he going to have as good a year this year as he did last year? It's impossible. He was a Norris Trophy winner last year. I believe he had over 70 points. I mean, he still could end up maybe above 50 or 60 points, but I just don't think it's possible to have as good a year as he had last year. So, I'll be curious to see what the Flames decide to do down the road. I don't know necessarily if Hall is the fit, but if they're going to trade for Hall, they're going to have to trade somebody significant out of there to the Devils, and they're going to have to make sure that Taylor Hall is willing to sign a contract to be in that new location, because you're not going to trade away a good player. Just for example, let's say if they were interested in trading Johnny Gaudreau, a New Jersey kid, to the Devils, he's under contract for several years. That would just roll forward, whereas Taylor Hall is not under contract, so that would be part of it as well. So, you know, I think it only makes sense from the standpoint that the Flames are a struggling team and they may be looking to do something significant, but I don't think, I don't necessarily think that that's someplace that makes a ton of sense right now.
And Irene says, the great Don LaGreca, the great EJ Raddick, love the show and how positive you guys are. Sharks and Stars seem to have turned things around, putting together great runs in the past few weeks. What do you think has been the key factors for each team?
Well, I'll tell you what, I wasn't all that positive about the Sharks. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
I mean, they were not playing very well at all. I think the schedule has helped the Sharks a little bit. I think they've had a lot of home games, and they will have a lot of home games between November the 1st and January the 1st. I think they play something like 22 of 31 at home. So they've had a lot of home games, and the schedule lightened up a little bit around the early part of November. So I think that was helpful as well for that team. And I think guys just kind of found their way a little bit. So, and the goaltending's been a little bit better. The penalty killing has been good all year long. So I think a number of things came together. I'm still not necessarily sold on them. But, they have taken advantage of that, and they are trying to find their way back to the surface, so to speak. As for the Stars, they started off with a very tough schedule. They had a couple of injuries. They were integrating a couple of important new players to their team. And they were not playing great defense. And I think what happened was after that first stretch, I think it was like 1-7-1, they got back to playing Dallas Stars hockey, which was a little bit more structure and a little bit more stingy. And goaltenders got a little bit better. And their better players started to pick up the pace. And a Pavelski and a Corey Perry got back in the lineup. And Pavelski got more acclimated. So a bunch of things kind of came into the place for the Dallas Stars. But they have been on just a crazy successful run over these last 14, 15 games or so, and they've kind of worked their way up with six-game winning streak. They've worked themselves up into second place in the Central. So, we thought they were going to be good at the start of the season, and now they're showing that they are just that.
And Robert says, EJ and Don, how often you talk about the Thanksgiving rule, But has anyone actually compared the final standings to the Thanksgiving standings over the past couple of years?
Yeah, people do. People do it all the time because of that idea that, you know, if you're in the playoffs on American Thanksgiving, that's a good thing. And most of the time they stay the same. I think that was something that was borne out more in years gone by. I think over the last several years, I don't have the numbers in front of me, there have been more teams that I'm on the outside looking in on U.S. Thanksgiving that have found their way into the playoffs, basically because we have so much parity now. And, I mean, Tampa Bay is sitting here in sixth place in the Atlantic, you know, as we speak, and they're outside of the playoffs, but they've played three or four fewer games than some of these teams. They've played five fewer games than the Toronto Maple Leafs. So, you know, and they sit only 2 points behind them. So, you know, I think that it was something we used to talk about with good reason more. I think we'll probably still talk about it because it's a milestone, but I don't think it's necessarily the end of the world now. As long as you have connection to the pack, in the playoff pack, which is pretty tight, usually you have a chance to get there.
All right, EJ, it's always fun. I will see you a little bit later on tonight.
I will see you.
All right.
Awesome.
Looking forward to it, and we'll talk to you again next Monday.
You got it.
All right, that is the great EJ Raddick. He's going to be at the Garden tonight. Matt Zuccarello's return to Madison Square Garden, a perfect example of a player that won't have his number retired, not going to the Hall of Fame, but definitely deserves a tribute when he returns to the Garden tonight because he played such a significant role with this organization, a major player on the team that went to the Stanley Cup Final in 2014. His head injury during the 2015 playoffs probably stopped the Rangers from maybe making another run to the Stanley Cup that year and not losing to Tampa in the conference final. And he was just so loved by fans, so I think the reaction tonight is going to be absolutely tremendous. So that should be a lot of fun. I want to shout out Sam Diaz. It's his birthday today. He says he gives me a section of where he's going to be at Madison Square Garden tonight. So I'll try to swing by and certainly say hello to you. Slew of games tonight because of the way the schedule's been changed with only one game on Thanksgiving on Thursday. Traditionally, there's a lot of games on Thursday. So the NHL wedging a lot of games on Monday and Wednesday because of the condensed week. But we'll still be back with on Wednesday. We're going to still do the Monday, Wednesday, Friday thing. So Leah Hextall will join us coming up on Wednesday. We can recap Tuesday, recap everything that went on Monday night as well. So best way to get to me at Don LaGreca, hashtag game misconduct. Thanks so much to EJ for giving us a couple of minutes today, going over the Babcock firing, going over the Bertuzzo suspension, and everything going on in the National Hockey League. So we'll be back with you again on Wednesday with Leah. This was the Monday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.